complaint filed in federal court in Lincoln, the girl and her family are suing her boyfriend's family, the sheriff's deputies, the police officers, a doctor and his assistant, and the county prosecutor, charging them variously with trespass, assault, false arrest, causing emotional distress, and violating their constitutional rights. While few of those named in the suit were willing to be interviewed before it was settled, none appeared to dispute the facts of the case. Rather, the issue appeared to be whether actions taken by a community strongly opposed to abortion were an acceptable use of the legal system or an example of anti-abortion extremism. For Kathy Toll, the mother of the boyfriend, the issue was clear. Quote, "It's an awful thing to find that at 23 weeks the baby has no rights and the father has no rights. None." But Janet Gallagher, a lawyer with the ACLU's Reproductive Freedom Project, which is representing the family, said, "There was an outrageous violation of this girl's individual rights and her family's rights. Boyfriend interference with women's choice to go ahead with or end a pregnancy has been a continuing problem all over the country, despite the fact that the courts have ruled over and over that this is a decision to be made by the women. And this is the most flagrant instance I've seen of public authorities being drawn into and assisting that interference." According to the complaint, the interference started on the following Wednesday night when the boyfriend went to the girl's house with his mother and stepfather, John Toll, and several of his friends. They pounded on the door, and before her father could open it, kicked it in so that it struck Scott in the eye and struck his daughter across the face. Kind of reminds me of what Melissa went through for having her baby, which I refer to because you've brought it on the air before. I wanted to share that with people because it kind of gets to me that while fetuses are presumed to have all these human rights in America these days, at least in a political sentiment tide, young women in their teens are having their rights undermined and taken away and just flushed down the toilet on a massive scale. I don't think this incident in Blair, Nebraska could have happened if it weren't for the Newt Gingriches who are simultaneously and systematically and ruthlessly taking away the women's ordinary rights, as few as they are. You know, I mean, you're not going to stop the procreation of humanity by putting people under more pressure. In fact, I believe it's only going to increase it, because the more barren and awful your life becomes, the more drive you're going to naturally have, because we're animal critters, to do something to change it and to seek comfort. And that causes pregnancy sometimes. So, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm taking a stand against fathers' paternity rights and responsibilities. I think men are kind of getting a screwed deal in a few ways along with this anti-baby sentiment. But after listening to the women on the radio talk about not being allowed to be in a tent, for God's sake, a tent on a muddy field when they're pregnant, and this on top of having learned that in our state, the AFDC program has systematically moved farther and farther away from providing food, let alone any serious benefits, to the mother who has a baby inside her until the very last trimester. This is not America. This stinks. So I guess I just wanted to let people know, in case there's other people who want to help, that I'm on the warpath, and I want to show how the misogynist behavior of people in Congress is leading to assault, abuse, and mutilation of women. You know, just last month, while women were patting themselves on the backs for still having the right to vote, this is the kind of thing that's going on in the small towns of America, including Santa Cruz.
Yep. Amen. I don't know what to respond to that. I've run across only one positive headline. The newspapers are full of negative headlines regarding the sellout of the destruction of the welfare programs federally. But there is the supervisors in San Francisco. Here's a little bit of light. This was a week ago in the 920 San Francisco Examiner. While other counties across the state are slashing welfare, San Francisco's Board of Supervisors has voted to loosen the rules for welfare recipients. The board voted 6-5 Monday to give welfare payments to applicants who have as much as $500 in savings. They are now limited to $345 in savings. Yes, this is not too much of a big reform, but considering that everybody else is being wiped out all over the place in terms of even your right to get welfare, this, I suppose, is a revolutionary development. The Santa Francisco Board of Supervisors is the probably the most liberal of the Board of Supervisors across the state. The idea is to get poor people off the streets, said Supervisor Angela Alioto, who sponsored legislation raising it to $500, the savings allowed. Gives them first and last month's rent in the bank so they can get off of GA, General Assistance.
Right.
Mayor Jordan opposes the higher limit and is likely to veto the measure, Press Secretary Stacey Waters said after the vote. At a time when other counties are lowering GA, it sends the wrong message and increases the likelihood of San Francisco becoming a magnet for GA recipients and liberalizes the whole process, Walters said. The vote came despite warnings by the Department of Social Services administrators that the measure would cost the city at least $25,000 a year. There are some 14,000 people collecting general assistance in San Francisco. The city already has the highest monthly payments in the Bay Area, giving general assistance recipients $345 a month. Boy, people can apply for welfare after living just 15 days in San Francisco. As many as 20 other counties have petitioned the state to reduce their monthly payments, said Sally Kipper, Assistant General Manager for the Administration of the Department of Social Services. Last week, the Alameda County Board of Supervisors, 2 weeks ago actually, voted to cut monthly checks for single adults from $300 to $221. And I got more to read about this, but Linda has some pertinent comments. What's the comment, Linda?
Oh, I'm steaming. I appreciate your... I'm being fluttered around. I guess my mouth isn't in the right range. Is this better?
Good. Yeah, you just...
Thank you.
When you get loud, it starts distorting. So.
I guess I think it's cool that they'll inch up the housing allowance that you can save to get deposits, but San Francisco is not much better than here in terms of what security deposits really cost. So it's not going to make that much difference. But if you set this article that you were just sharing, Robert, in the context of what else San Francisco is doing to general assistance, you might see that while they're polishing their little patina of liberalism, they're not really liberalizing anything for poor people. Food Not Bomb's job up there is not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. For just one illustration or an instance of this, they've decided in San Francisco to subtract a certain amount of the money, a big chunk of the GA allowance that they have there, which is what you said, $345 or something a month now, and it's going down to a little over $200. And they're going to give it to their health, their public health services people. The money that you used to be able to buy toothpaste and condoms and maybe even clean underwear with once in a while. I mean, while I was homeless, I was always having to buy socks and toothbrushes because I couldn't find them. They're taking that to give back to themselves in another budget pocket and calling it a health care for them. But they're not doing anything to create access to that population they're taking the money away from to the health care. In fact, if they're doing what most of the counties in the state are doing in health care, it's going to become less and less and less available because they're doing the same gerrymandering with the budget and health services in the state. I think the important thing here is to be alerted that all the counties have been given carte blanche by the legislature to dump or rewrite their general assistance programs. So I don't see this as radical or even liberal. I see this as a fake out for the public.
Hmm. Well, let's look at this figure, which is considered to be so generous. $345 a month as a... As the GA, that's the monthly payment of the San Francisco. What exactly does that figure mean for a person on the streets or a person who's trying to live in a hotel room?
Well, first of all, if you're on the street, you don't get that much. If you get that full amount, it's because you can already prove that you already have a housing expense. Now, where are you going to get one of those within that whole budget? But if you don't have it, you lose about $150. Same thing happens here in our county. I forgot your question. I'm sorry.
Well, the question is, what's the significance of that figure for a person trying to meet her or his needs in a month? I mean, how does that money go? How rapidly does it go? Where does it go? That sort of thing.
Well, you know what things cost, Robert. If you had to buy your own food, it'll take care of a week and a half, but then you don't get anything else taken care of. If you're lucky enough to be in one of the rat, roach, and drug-infested, cheap, what they call welfare hotels up in the city, the downtown hotel rooms.
Hotel hells, they call them, I think.
Well, I called them hells when I first met you back in the late 70s, because they get pretty scary after dark, but maybe, I don't know if they're worse or better now. I haven't had to be there. But I guess you get to choose between getting a bus pass for the month or having a choice about what you eat or having some food at all, or housing, if you can find some substandard housing. It'll pay for one of those, you know, and it doesn't leave anything for eyeglasses or anything else you might need. I mean, think about it, you know. You can't get a room here for less than $350, and that if you know somebody. Are you willing to be fucked over by the landlord?
Well, so much for supervisors' loosen welfare savings rule here in the paper. However, we will on the upside, we have the public toilet situation. The Board of Supervisors passed a resolution urging BART's Board of Directors to approve the installation of public toilets at the 16th and 24th Street BART plazas up in San Francisco. While neighboring merchants are eager to get the toilets installed, BART directors have said they are unwilling to take responsibility for policing the toilets. It sounds like Metro refusing to keep its toilets open at night. Sounds like the city's parking garages here in Santa Cruz refusing to keep their toilets open at night. We need toilets in Santa Cruz. And, of course, we don't have them at night. We have laws against urination, laws against defecation, and laws against sleeping, but no legal places to sleep and no legal places to shit and piss. This just seems to be a paradox.
It seems to be a recurring pattern around the state also. I think the more public toilets, the better. I think every park should have two or three. I think if the merchants want it, then there are the resources.
Did you mention the new toilets in San Francisco?
To
yes,
figure out.
Yes, I did.
Yeah, did you hear why they don't have them here?
Yeah.
Is this a joke?
No, I'm serious.
Go ahead, Al.
They don't have them here because for some reason in Santa Cruz they won't clean themselves. They just don't work here. They, you know, it must be the energy or something. You know,
thank you, Al.
Sounds like a job for the super hosts. You know, in Capitola, they have just as many problems keeping the public toilets down at the beach in Capitola Village open to the public, but they do it anyway because they want tourists to come there. They don't want the urinals smelling like urine or worse. They don't want the street corners smelling like urine or worse. So they make that a priority.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. I wasn't aware that Capitola kept its toilets open late at night, but they do they?
Well, I don't know if the one I heard them arguing about the cost of plumbing for can be locked up because it's on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't either, but that's a positive thing, although I think Capitola also has a curfew, and it has, I think, its own sleeping ban. Capitola, there's a law against camping in Capitola as well. Yeah, I'm not quite sure how it goes. So, anything more you want to say on the issue that you came in originally for, Linda, which is this forced pregnancy, it sounds like. They're going to force this teenager to have a baby.
They've already court-ordered, an abortion, one way or the other. The point I wanted to make about this Nebraskan obscenity is that teenage women are being singled out by the government at every level and being treated more disrespectfully and more abusively and are in more grave danger than women who are over 18 or teenage men the same age. And to me, that's discrimination. And we need to alert feminists who think they're on top of it. You know, I've heard of these feminist women who think they're liberalizing and creating some resources where the laws they get behind then turn out to be little Gestapo kicks in the butts to force children back into their parents' house who have been or should have been, emancipated, you know? I mean, maybe I'm oversensitive to this because I've had children, including teenagers, who have had for a time to live on the streets. And I've had children who have contemplated and even attempted suicide. And I'm just sick, I'm real sick about how we as a society are treating the people who are going to have to hold what's left of this social system and this social order and this alleged democracy together. We need to, I mean, you see it on the mall. People get hassled more where Kelly Moore Paints used to be than anywhere else on the street, as far as I can tell, most of the time. This is how we're treating our youth.
See, Kelly Moore Paints, for those of you who don't know, is a store right across from the Metro Transit Center where a lot of young people gather. It's next to the Café de Nouveau and the Blue Lagoon.
And whenever a little culture starts erupting, it's also where a lot of patrol cars gather. I just think it's disequal enough to be very dangerous, and if it gets any worse, to me it's an equation with genocide. We're killing our young women because they start acting like women. We got it all backwards. We got to create safe havens for young people.
And for those who are interested in observing the destroyers of the safe havens, the downtown hosts, the green shirts, I invite you all to come down to the Hound Dog the Host's table, which is a monitoring table that we've set up right across from Hosts HQ. Hosts are the merchant-funded program that pays people in green shirts to go around and tell people not to sit down here, not to ask for spirit change there, and fingers them for the police for these kinds of innocent behavior that does not please the profit-minded merchant community, which passed these bigoted laws a year and a half ago about sitting on the sidewalk. This table, the Hound Dog the Host's table, mm-hmm. You can volunteer at 423-HUFF, or you can volunteer at 438-8630. Talk to Stubborn Heart Star or Peppercorn Penny. You can also come on down. They're usually there during the day, at least for a certain period of time. They need more volunteers. That's happening from usually 12 to 2 or 3. And again, it's right next to the Del Mar Theater at Lincoln and Pacific in downtown Santa Cruz. So if you want to help out, if you want to help fight the upcoming curfew law, if you want to help find alternatives for young women the way Linda was discussing, if you want to find a way to stop the harassment downtown of young people and unconventional people, street people, homeless people, black people, Hispanic people, gang people, any people that don't deserve to be hassled simply because of their status, come on down, come to the host's table, and let's keep an eye on this front line of the little green rangers, the green goblins, the grinners that run around and make life hospitable for those with money and difficult for those without.
And beyond keeping an eye on them, I'd like to encourage people to take every opportunity to train and enlighten the hosts. Get to know them. I mean, whether you have time to sit at the table, and they deserve some support. If you bump into one of the green shirts, have a conversation.
Actually, I tried to have a conversation with one of them recently on tape, and they declined to be taped. Because actually we do spend a certain amount of time publicizing the realities of what they do in loud voices outside their little hideaway, which again was what you'd be doing. You would be taking reports of complaints, you would be following the hosts around peacefully and noting what they're doing and informing others with flyers of their rights to file complaints against the hosts if they feel they've been abused.
Robert, I also want to comment on the formerly countywide and now unincorporated county unwide youth curfew, unless you've already covered it at length here.
No, go ahead.
Okay, you and I and other people were watching them jockey around, watching the County Board of Supervisors jockey themselves politically. I want to say something else, but I'm not as free as the radio sometimes. And it's coming back in like 3 weeks, possibly. The County Board of Supervisors essentially gave Mark Tracy, the new sheriff for the county, carte blanche to come back to them with some recommendation about a curfew. And to quote my son, who is a teenager, what the hell are they doing creating new laws against young people when there's no place for them to go? And which is the case almost everywhere in the county after dark, let alone into the night. I'm going to be trying to get flyers all over that unincorporated part of the county, but I have no car. If you can help post laundromats and housing projects,
yeah, I haven't even
please call 426-7701, okay? And if you want to know more about it, call that same number or call Robert. He's pretty well informed. Or call the county and ask for a copy of the proposed ordinance that has been given to Tracy to figure out how to make it work. I don't support the curfew. I think it's just another form of abusing young people because you can get because the politicians can get away with it. Okay, that's 426-7701 or 423-HUFF.
So, well, I'm glad you came, Linda. Is there anything more you want to say before I put us back onto tape?
Yes, one more thing. I hear there's a rumor, and when I leave here, I'm going to go find out more about it, that on Friday there will be a demonstration against the dastardly welfare cuts. Right now the Senate and the House of Representatives are so-called compromising about what they're going to give Clinton. The Senate has voted in last week a pretty ugly thing from my point of view. So I can't give you any dates and times and specifics, but put your ear to the ground or check out your bulletin boards or call Campaign for Budget Fairness at 427-1741, I think, or at least call them in care of Community Action Board. You can look it up. And find out where and when and what this reaction is going to be in the form of a protest on Friday.
Thanks, Robert.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Linda. And come on down to the host table today. As I said before, I'd like to see you. If you found anything with this on the show that you either agree or disagree strongly with that you want mentioned on the next show, give me a call at 423-HUFF. And that number will be available throughout the week. And now we're going to return to some more highlights from the mall. Interviews I did about a week ago, actually exactly a week ago, Monday. These are rather unedited, so I hope they'll be of interest. If they're not, you can call and criticize.
When he came back, they turned his order of supposed mendicants into an institution. Mm-hmm. They'd taken the little chapel that he and a few others had rebuilt with their own hands for meditation and prayer and turned it into a library. These things happen.
Indeed. What is your moniker, sir?
Oh, Tony.
So this is Tony. All right then, Tony, I thank you for your comments and we may put you on the radio.
Oh,
please. Exciting. No. Santa Cruz, we're in line here at the Food Not Bombs meal. My question is, why aren't you folks eating at the free meal? Why the Food Not Bombs meal?
Because it is delicious.
I see. So you think the food here is better than the free meal?
Absolutely.
Really? Now what do you think about this fry, the woman I just mutilated for life?
No, this is fry.
So actually, I think we have heard that one before. That often happens with this machine. It plays forward and it plays backward. So, I've got a tape here that we definitely haven't heard before. It's from Berkeley. It's from Micro Radio in Free Radio Berkeley. And it's called the Copwatch Radio Hour. Now, this is about Berkeley and its Copwatch organization, and it's a little bit regional. But nonetheless, you might find it interesting because I think we should do something similar down here. The Citizens Police Review Board is doing nothing, and we have no Copwatch. So let's listen to a little of micro radio in the U.S. Featuring the Copwatch Radio Hour from about a month ago, actually, up north. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to sign off, and I'm going to let you hear this, think about it, and think about everything you've heard today. No doubt it means you'll hustle on down to the homeless table. Used to be called the homeless table. I guess now we're calling it the hound dog, the host's table. So come on down to that today. Join us and help us to keep an eye on what's going on downtown. We have petitions to the city council for changing the laws, for expanding the limits, very narrow limits of tolerance, for reestablishing diversity in Santa Cruz. And if you decide you're interested in being on the air on this show yourself, you have something to say about civil liberties, give a call to 423-HUFF or meet me at 9:45 on Friday morning at Taco Bell on Pacific and Laurel Streets. Until then, this is Bathrobes Pierre Robert from Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, signing off.
Show here on Radio for Peace International, featuring the best programming from unlicensed radio stations in the United States. Such stations are sometimes referred to as pirate radio stations, but most of us doing this work feel like that's a rather Orwellian view of the true reality. The true reality being that corporations like Disney and General Electric, operating solely in the interests of private profit, have locked up control of the nation's airwaves to the exclusion of virtually everyone else. Webster's Dictionary defines piracy as robbery on the high seas, an act of depredation that would, if committed on the land, amount to a felony. So who owns the airwaves and who's stealing them? Depends on your point of view. But we need to remember that in 1934, Congress passed a law guaranteeing the American people to be sole owners of the airwaves over the United States, and mandating that those airwaves be always operated in the public interest. The question then becomes, who has the public interest more at heart? Global transnational corporations in pursuit of profit? Or grassroots all-volunteer citizens groups such as Food Not Bombs, which now is affiliated with two alleged pirate stations in the city of San Francisco. Examined in this light, we quickly began to see who the real pirates are and determined that if the spirit of the 1934 law were going to be followed to the letter, it would be Disney, GE, and the other consortiums, which would be kicked out and the airwaves handed over entirely to micro-broadcasters. Coming up on today's program, we bring you another edition of the Copwatch Radio Hour. Copwatch is produced at Free Radio Berkeley in Berkeley, California, by the Berkeley Copwatch Organization. Copwatch members, who receive no pay for what they do, perform the difficult and often dangerous task of going into the streets and documenting abuses in the Oakland, Berkeley, and San Francisco police departments. The segment you're about to hear originally aired August 2nd, 1995.
You're listening to Free Radio Berkeley. This is the Copwatch Radio Hour. We are going to talk a lot about cops tonight. They're all over the place. To start off with, though, I'd like to talk for a second about Copwatch. Who is Copwatch? We're a grassroots all-volunteer organization that has an office on 2022 Blake Street here in Berkeley. And we have weekly meetings at 8 o'clock p.m. on Monday evenings. And we are a group that's getting together to work towards police accountability. We do that in many forms. One of the most important ways we do that is monitoring police on the streets. And we also come out with a Copwatch report. So you couldn't hear me. We're Copwatch. This is Copwatch Radio Hour. I'm Lenore. And I was just giving a description of who Copwatch is. If you're interested in helping us, we always need volunteers. We monitor police on the streets, as I was saying. We go out with video cameras, scanners, and incident reports, talk to community members, try and find out what the problems are. We also provide victim assistance. We have a lawyer referral service. We attend hearings, and we advise and assist victims in any way we can. One way we can do that is by publicizing incidences of police violence in our Copwatch report, which comes out about every other month. And we have one coming out towards the end of this month. If
you're interested in helping us produce that Cop Watch report, or if you've got a story you'd like us to report on, we'd be more than happy to hear what's going on with you. You can call our office at 548-0425. And, or you can stop by the office. We have office hours on Mondays from 11:30 to 2. And we also, like I said earlier, we have meetings on Mondays at 8 o'clock p.m. We always need volunteers. Come by, attend a meeting, give us a call, do what you can. So this evening, let's see, we're going to be playing a community forum on police violence, tape of a community forum on police violence that happened on July 10th of this year, in which four or five people who've been working towards police accountability for a number of years got together and gave speeches on ways to attack the epidemic problem of police violence in the Bay Area and across the nation. But first, I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about cops in the news. They've been all over the news recently. San Francisco Examiner's done a serious job on reporting about problems with police in the Bay Area. Chronicles mentioned a few things as well. First, I'll start off with talking about what's going on in San Francisco. San Francisco Examiner has done a good job of devoting front page story after front page story to Officer William Henry Wohler. This is a San Francisco police officer who's been on the force for a number of years. And check this out. Although disciplinary records and complaints posted to the OCC, which is the Office of Citizen Complaints in San Francisco, are confidential, Wohler has admittedly racked up, more than 30 complaints of recklessness, excessive force, rudeness, and unlawful death by his own admission. That's right. He'll tell you all about it. He says, quote, it's part of being a good cop. That's what Henry Wohler told the San Francisco Examiner. Apparently, part of that job includes fatally shooting a young man in the back, which is exactly what Henry Wohler did to Brian Sullivan 4 years ago. We've talked about this case before, as the unarmed Sullivan lay bleeding to death from Wohler's gunshot wounds in the back. Cops at the scene gave Wohler high fives for a good piece of work. We're not making this up. Witnesses at the scene testified that cops were celebrating the event, even as Sullivan was laying dying. You know what else witnesses saw? Henry Wohler and his partners rooting around the front yard of the address in which Sullivan died, apparently looking for something. Could it have been a shell casing? Because at the inquest, Wohler claimed that he shot Sullivan two blocks from where he actually did. Sullivan did have a shotgun when Wohler started chasing him, but he ditched it during the chase. Wohler claimed that at the time he fired his weapon, Sullivan was aiming a shotgun at him. That would have been two blocks away. The inquest cleared Wohler of any wrongdoing. Months later, the neighbor who owns the yard in which Sullivan died was digging in her garden, and what did she find? A shell casing. A shell casing that matched Wohler's gun. Bingo. The city and the police department claimed to the bitter end that there was no guilt on their part, but they quietly paid Sullivan's family $300,000 to drop the case. When the Examiner asked him to account for the discrepancies in his story, Wohler shrugged his shoulders and said, quote, sometimes I forget things. 2 weeks ago, after the city paid the Sullivans off, Officer Wohler caught Brian Sullivan's best friend in a back alley. According to Sullivan's best friend, Wohler grinned and said, quote, I have a present for you, and pepper sprayed him in the face. Wohler then took out his club and beat on him against a concrete wall. The attorney has a photograph, Sullivan's best friend's attorney has a photograph that documents a bloody boot mark on this man's scalp. After this incident, the Sullivans decided that maybe they want more than money. They filed suit with Brian Sullivan's best friend to get Henry Wohler off the San Francisco Police Department force. Sadly, more stories of Wohler emerged as the San Francisco Examiner dug deeper. Mueller was accused of threatening the lives of bystanders during a Sunday morning traffic accident. The bystanders were on their way to church in the Western Addition, but according to Mueller, it looked like he was, quote, surrounded by a bunch of drug dealers. Mueller responded to this by saying, quote, I go into my crazy mode, rip off my jacket, shout a lot, and look like I'm frothing at the mouth. Hey, you gotta go with what works. And now the San Francisco Examiner's broken the story that Mueller likes to cause traffic accidents with his reckless high-speed pursuits. In 1993, Henry Mueller sped off in pursuit of a car that ran a red light. Mueller wove through heavy traffic at 50 miles an hour, burned through the car, burned through stop sign intersections, and ran a red light at 55 miles an hour when he rammed into a Buick. Six passengers in the Buick suffered broken ribs and herniated discs, and Mueller's car was totaled. The city refused to pay for the damages to the other vehicles, and now the victims of this incident are suing the city of San Francisco for $200,000. By the way, where was Chief Rivera through all of this? Of all complaints lodged against Mueller, 30 by his own account, including murder, assault with a deadly weapon, and threatening civilians with death, Rivera sustained only one complaint, overturning the Office of Citizen Complaints rulings in every other incident. What was that one complaint that Chief Rivera sustained? Falsifying a police report. This led to a reprimand, not even a suspension. Rivera has refused to comment on Officer Mueller, promising a statement later in the future. In the meantime, Mueller has said maybe it's time for him to transfer to a desk job. He's 49 after all. How long can you keep up this strenuous police work? Mueller told the Examiner, quote, I think it's time I took a desk job. Sit back and collect my paycheck. I'm not going to do much except collect my paycheck. I'm just going to drive around town and collect my paycheck. Three times he said it, folks. What do you do when you're a cop who's been caught for murder, assault, and death threats? Let's say it all together. You collect your paycheck, collect your paycheck, collect your paycheck. Cops in the news in San Francisco go on and on. San Francisco cop Mark Andaya, who was recently found out to have a pretty bad history in the Oakland Police Department, which is where he used to work. This cop, Mark Andaya, was one of the 12 police officers